The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome in as students of the game. My name is Alex Bauman. I'm joined by my co-host today, Ray Oldenburg. Unfortunately, Nathan Gladwell could not be with us. He had some work priorities to handle, so he'll be back next week. We'll be able to talk with some Alabama basketball, the aftermath of their Elite Eight loss to Duke. We'll get his take on that next week. But, Greg, we have to talk about this week and what happened to the Auburn Tigers and the Alabama Crimson Tide. But first, let's start off with the only winner of the two being the Auburn Tigers, able to defeat Michigan State 70-64 in what was close all the way until the end. Tom Izzo and his team forced a few turnovers on the inbounds and try to get back in the game, but their shooting woes could not be taken care of by them. And Auburn heads to their second Final Four in program history, and that's the second under Bruce Pearl. So he's building a lot of good things at Auburn. But greatest talk about the game itself and how big of an impact this team has made on the program in just one short year.
Man, look, I'm going to introduce you to two friends or one friend of mine here in just a minute. But first, I want to get my take on this game and even the Michigan game and this whole tournament moving forward, what this run to the Final Four means for the program. Just like you mentioned, Alex, Bruce's second Final Four in five tournaments in 6 years, but we didn't have the 2020 tournament. So it's his second Final Four in five tournaments. It's just absolutely crazy. Look, first talking about this game, you're going to have to excuse me throughout the and the listeners are going to have to excuse me throughout the main portion of this podcast. I am recovering. My voice is recovering because I was in attendance in Atlanta on Sunday night. So y'all going to have to recover. You're going to have to let me recover a little bit. We are less than 24 hours at the time of this recording. So it was awesome. This is Auburn team that has found their rhythm again, rhythm that they kind of lost a little bit of towards the end of the year. I think playing the gauntlet of the schedule, especially in the SEC, really affected them at the end of the year. That rhythm's back. This Auburn team that I watched in the second half against Michigan and basically the whole game against Michigan State is the Auburn team that we saw in December and for the majority of the SEC schedule, where they won the best conference in NCAA basketball history by multiple games. Now, this is the team this is why they're the number one overall seed. This is the team that we saw all year. And that's what's impressive about it. It means a lot. It means a lot.
So just looking at the game as a whole, Gray, how was Auburn able to get past Michigan State handling all those punches Michigan State was throwing back and forth at Auburn?
Yeah, so I could easily say, you know, Auburn was able to outscore Michigan State. They were doing different things offensively, but that's not the case. It seemed like during that run of losing the last three of the last four coming into the NCAA tournament for Auburn, it seemed like during that run, Auburn had lost a little bit of their gas defensively. Man, is that back. Man, I think this performance against Michigan State was one of, if not the best defensive performance of the year by the Tigers, because of the defensive ability of both your guards and your bigs and them working together. It's incredible. Being able to watch on-ball defenders like Chad Baker-Mazzara, Denver Jones, and Miles Kelly out there, watching, you know, these all Big Ten guards not being able to get by them, but they finally able to get by them. And they have to see Dylan Cardwell right there, or Janai Broome right there, or even Chaney Johnson right there, and not being able to do anything is outstanding. I mean, you held Jaden Akins to 6 of 17. You held Jace Richardson to 4 of 13. You held Trey Holloman 0 of 10. You held Jeremy Fears 1 of 4. I mean, these are guards that tore through the Big Ten this year and were very, very successful against really good defensive teams. But Auburn's not just a very good defensive team. They're an elite defensive team. And it seemed like they had lost that previously, but now they've got them back.
So looking ahead to the rest of the tournament, Jani Broome, he went down with an injury. He was able to come back, but you could tell that elbow, that shoulder was bothering him a little bit, wasn't able to use it as much. And going forward, Todd Pettifer has been the only consistent guy outside Jani Broome all tournament long. Miles Kelly has struggled. Baker Mazzara has struggled. Denver Jones outside of the Creighton game has heavily struggled. Chaney Johnson has given them good minutes off the bench, but he hasn't given them that 20 points, that crazy 20 points he's known to do. Dylan Carwell has played the best basketball of his career. He's not the type of guy that's going to give you 10 and 10, but I would argue outside of Jani Broome, he's been the MVP for Auburn this tournament run. The defense he's played on big men, his ability to switch on opposing guards and keep up with them. I mean, that's something that is really hard for a big man to be able to do in any level of basketball. And for him to be able to do that, which has been shown throughout the tournament. But how is Auburn going to be able to weather the storm with Jani Broome dealing with that injury and advance further in this tournament?
Yeah, you got to shoot the ball from the outside better. Miles has to be better. Chad has to be better. Denver had a great game against Michigan and some good shots against Creighton, but he's been inconsistent, and that's not what we're used to seeing from Denver Jones. Tahad has really been the only guy that's been pretty consistent from outside. You're going to have to make threes to win two games in San Antonio and come back with a national championship if you want to do that, especially with the injury to Jani Broome. Now, Broome, let's just talk about this for a second. All right. I'm going to bring this up, and then I'm going to introduce you to my friend here. All right. Jani Broome has cemented himself as the greatest Auburn basketball player in its program history. No question about it. He's played here 3 years. He's won SEC Player of the Year. He's in contention for the National Player of the Year this year. What he's done for the program, he brought us to a Final Four. Unmatched. But the moment that he had when he came back, snagged a one-hand rebound, and buried a three on the other end, I don't think I've quite had the opportunity to understand the magnitude of a moment since I watched, as an Auburn fan at least, since I watched Michael Dyer not be down in the 2010 National Championship in football. I don't think there's been a moment like that where I've just been like, wow, this is crazy. Because it wasn't the kick six. The kick six at the time, I was like, what the heck is even happening? This unrelatable type of moment. Same thing with the tip catch with Ricardo Lewis. Unrelatable. This, the magnitude of that moment. Seeing Julie Broome, Jani's mom, bawling in the stands next to Jani's father. Hearing Ian Eagle going, he's going to come back out and sit on the bench with his teammate. Oh, no, he's not. He's coming back in the game. and hearing Bill Raftery's voice, it's a miracle in Atlanta, is amazing. Being able to be there, it was a blessing for sure. And the atmosphere was absolutely outstanding. By the way, that's one of the more underrated things that we're not talking about when we talk about these games and we talk about playing close to home is so important. It helped Duke tremendously, and it helped Auburn tremendously. You want to know why? Because they were the two best teams all year long. They got rewarded for it, and it worked. It worked. There was about 90% Auburn fans in State Farm Arena, both the Michigan game and the Michigan State game, and it was effective for sure. The energy that crowd provided was something else. But, Alex, you take it over for just 1 sec. I'm going to be right back. I'm going to introduce you to my friend.
Okay, great. Gray's going to get his friend right now. Let's see what he's doing here. But it was a good game for Auburn, able to get back to the Final Four. Last team to do that was led by Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, Samir Dowdy, Chuma Okeke, who unfortunately went down with an injury. And when I saw Jani Broome go down with an injury, all I thought was, oh no, it happened again for Auburn. But luckily for the Auburn faithful, Jani Broome was able to come back and finish out the game. And looks to be able to come and be able to play this weekend, and if they make the national championship, play there. So that's big for the Auburn Tigers going into this Final Four run. Gray, who's your friend here?
My name is Barner Gray. I just want to point out that Aiden Holloway has Alabama has won Final Four the past 2 years. Auburn has won Final Four the past 2 years. Aiden Holloway has zero. Just want to point that out. Where are these folks that was talking about Bruce Pearl can't coach in March? You people are crazy. He has two Final Fours thanks to Jahni Broome. Broome, here we go, baby. This is big time. Big time Auburn basketball. I got my orange and blue glasses on. Got my shaker. Just got back from Atlanta. Here we go. All right, I got one more thing to say. Where are all those people that were talking about this team lost three of their last four? They're not going to do anything. They lost to A&M. They lost to Alabama. They lost to Tennessee. All those teams were really good teams. What the heck are y'all even talking about? This is getting ridiculous. This is getting ridiculous. Now, one more thing. I know Gray mentioned it just a second ago, but this man right here. Not only the greatest basketball player ever come to Auburn, but listen, y'all. He's up there with the Cam Newtons and the Bo Jacksons for the greatest athletes to ever come through Auburn. And he cemented himself in that moment with his mom crying in the stands. This is big time. Two Final Fours of the past five tournaments. I wouldn't have even dreamed of this, even making one Final Four. And all that talk about 2019 was a fluke. It might have been. The team got hot at the right time. However, this one wasn't a fluke. This one was not a fluke. This team deserves to be there, and I'll be there watching in San Antonio.
Thank you. Thank you, Barner Gray. I hope actual Gray comes back. That's enough Barner Gray for me for at least 3 months. I can't take any more of Barner Gray. Thanks for that, Gray.
But yes, that was he needs to go. He comes out at very occasional times. We will see him again if Auburn is able to win the national championship. We definitely see him again, but hopefully, because he has not been able to come out for football a lot recently.
we won't even get into that, Greg, because we'll have to get depressed Barner Gray if we talk about Auburn football.
That's true.
But after you left and while Barner Gray was coming on to the show, I was touching on the previous Final Four team for the Auburn Tigers with Jared Harper, Bryce Brown, Samir Dowdy, Chuma Okeke, who wasn't able to play in that Final Four game because of his ACL injury. But if you look at both teams, you just touched on it there, Gray. This one wasn't a fluke. The one back in 2018, you could see as somewhat of a fluke. But looking top to bottom, does this team have a better chance than the 2018 team did?
I'm going to say yes. My only hesitant to those are two things. One, the injury to Jahni. Don't know how healthy he's going to be. I fully expect him to play and to play complete minutes and to start and that sort of thing. He had three parts of his body go three different directions on Sunday night. So playing a game 6 days later against a very, very good Florida team is tough. And that leads me right into my second point, which makes me concerned, is this is an unbelievable Florida team. It's unbelievable other side with Duke and Houston. Three teams that Auburn has already played against and they're 1-2 against have a chance to get revenge on that Florida team. After Florida came in and made every shot in Neville Arena in February, they made every shot. And I think that was one of Auburn's worst games of the year. I didn't want to call that a wake-up call at the time because you didn't need a wake-up call to get up for a game when you're the number one team in the country. You don't need a wake-up call when you've got a bunch of seniors and a bunch of older guys, experienced guys. So I didn't like that analogy at the time, but this one is a revenge game for sure. And definitely if you're able to play somebody like a Duke in the championship game, if you get past Florida, that as well. But I say yes, because that Final Four team also had a major injury to their best player in Chuma Okeke, who was playing out of his mind. And they were going up against a very tough team in Virginia who plays a very different pace than that Auburn team did. And it definitely affected them. And that team didn't have number four. A lot of times when you don't have your star player, like a Chuma Okeke,
And obviously your guards have got to step up. And Auburn played well enough to win that Virginia game. But I think this Auburn team, if they were playing that Virginia team, beats them by 25. At least. Yeah. I think this is a completely different type of team. I think in comparison, I think this Auburn team beats the 2019 Auburn team, even at full strength both ways, just because they're able to beat you going fast, going slow, shooting well. If they don't shoot well, they're still able to beat you. They play defense better. They're bigger. Yeah. So I would go with this team as a better shot.
So we talked about Auburn, their big win, making it back to the Final Four under Bruce Pearl. Jani Broome injury. Is he going to be able to play? He will be able to play. X-rays came back negative in the locker room. Going to be some physical therapy this week, but he will be able to play against Florida and maybe in the national championship if Auburn's able to make it that far. But let's talk about the state rival here, the Alabama Crimson Tide, taking on Duke, the one seed in their region, and it was rough. That's really all I can say is it was rough. Start out, you score 2 points, Duke scores 15, and Nate Oates talked about it in the postgame presser. You can't start out that way against Duke and expect to come out and win that basketball game. And you look at it, you start out down 13, you lose by 20. And there were multiple times in that game where Alabama had cut it to 6, and then Alabama just falls apart. But great, I want to ask your opinion here. Yeah. You've seen this Alabama team all year. You saw them come to Auburn and beat Auburn. You watched this game against Duke. You saw the preseason number 2 ranking, the players Nate Oates was able to bring in, the expectations of, I said on the show, national championship or bust this year. You lose a Terrell Reitzel for the year. You never were able to play with your complete roster a single game because when Reitzel went out, Youngblood wasn't healthy. Millett came back for a game against North Carolina, Darian Reed was hurt for a large portion of SEC play. It's just injuries piled up, but you cannot use that as an excuse if you're the Crimson Tide and Nate Oates. But what you saw from this Alabama team, did they exceed your expectations, falter, or were you just okay with what they achieved this season?
As an outsider, I would say they did about what I expected them to do. Look, I can't fault this Alabama team for running into what Duke is. Duke just really irks me to say. Duke is an outstanding basketball team, and they were a bad matchup for Alabama in every way possible. And that's what hurt, and that's what cost them a trip to the Final Four. You know, we could be talking to completely different circumstances here where Alabama is exceeding expectations and that sort of thing. But I think over the course of the season, yes, Alabama did have some woes, some losses that they should not have lost, and they won some games that they weren't expected to win. And that's about what you expect from this team. I think the biggest thing moving forward for Alabama is how do you replace the best player in Alabama men's basketball history and Mark Sears. And you're also replacing guys like Youngblood and Nelson and Amori and those guys. So it's going to be important to see what Nate Oates does this offseason. But right now I would say, yeah, that's about where I expected Alabama to end up. But now it's all about replacing Mark Sears. He is Alabama basketball to a T. When you look up Alabama basketball, you better see a picture of Mark Sears, because what he did for that program. I know Brandon Miller was all great and stuff. I know Robert Horry had a very successful career in the NBA, so he's probably the best NBA player. Nobody did for the program what Mark Sears did for Alabama basketball, and I hope that's how Alabama folks remember him. I hope Alabama folks remember him for making the Final Four last year, that run that he went in the West Regional last year, the shot against Auburn, the 34 points against BYU. That's how I hope Alabama fans are able to remember Mark Sears, and not a game where the matchup was just not good. Tyrese Proctor and Konkanipple were just not the matchup Alabama wanted to run into against Duke. So, it's that one's going to sting for Nate Oates and that Alabama program for throughout the offseason, but hopefully that'll be able to turn them into quite the monster next year.
Yeah, as a Bama fan, this lost things. You look last year, you get to the Final Four and you run into UConn, the eventual national champion. And this year you run into the team that's playing the best in the tournament and the best in the country right now in Duke. And it's just back-to-back years of you run into the two best teams playing the best basketball right there. It's not something that Nate Oates wants to happen again and again. He talked about it in the post-game press conference where he said, if we're the one seed, we don't run into Duke. We don't get Duke. We get a Texas Tech. We might get a Tennessee. We might get a Michigan State. We avoid playing Duke at their best. Now, we're not going to avoid Duke entirely because they're probably going to end up playing the national championship at that point, but there's a high likelihood you are able to get to a second straight Final Four and meet those expectations that Nate Oates had going into the tournament, which were, I expected the Final Four and nothing less. And they didn't get to the Final Four. And it's not the end of the world. And like you said, Gray, it's not something you want to remember. Mark Sears is going 2-for-12, 1-for-6 from three, and probably one of his worst games in an Alabama uniform. Or Grant Nelson, who played some pretty good defense against Cooper Flagg and probably earned him some NBA money. Or Cliff Amore and his struggles in this game where he was only able to play 13 minutes. Or Chris Youngblood and the time he scored that many points against Mississippi State and had a career game. It's those moments you want to remember. You don't want to remember the lows. You want to remember the highs. And something I saw on Twitter was, it's the end of an era, but it's the foundation of something great. You're going to lose Mark Sears. You're going to lose Grant Nelson, who are two of the most storied and most awarded players in Alabama history. You get to two Elite Eights. You get to a Final Four, the first one in school history. So these guys, you go out losing to Duke, but you got to hold your head high because you made this program a million times better. You left it better than you found it, is what I'll say for those two guys there. It's not the way they wanted to go out. And looking at this as a whole for Nate Oates, it's a teaching moment for him. Is you learned we cannot roll with the size guards we played in this game. You cannot roll with the Mark Sears anymore. He's great, but when you play a Duke who has Tyrese Proctor and Conk Nipple, he doesn't have the ability to get his shot off the way he should. You can't roll with an Aiden Holloway alongside a LeBaron Pylon. Two very skinny guards who are not physical enough to go up against physical big guards like Proctor and Knipple. You can't have that. Cliff Amore, while he's great, a great rim protector, we saw in this game, Nate Oates' system, it does not really work. When Alabama was having success, they were pulling Malawach away from the basket. Aiden Sherrill hit 2 3-pointers to bring it closer. In the future, Nate Oates has to attack the portal and go for centers that have shown the ability to shoot the 3-pointer. His system does not work going against a team like Duke if you're going to have a center that is not a threat outside of catching a lob or getting a putback dunk. Yeah. It's a good learning moment for him. And the defense, it was putrid. That's all I can say for the defense. It was putrid. The switching, there was lack of communication. There was a moment where Mark Sears ended up on Malawach. That can't happen ever.
Yeah.
And you just got to stick with the guy and die at that point. You cannot let Mark Sears switch onto a 7'2 guy with a 7'4 wingspan or however long it is.
Yeah.
That he has no hope. I don't care how good Mark Sears is as a basketball player. That's like asking me to go guard the Jolly Green Giant. It's not going to happen. This team, I'm proud of what they accomplished this season. They came in as the number 2 overall team in the preseason rankings. They didn't win the national championship like I hoped they would and expected them to, but they made it to another Elite Eight. And I was able to sit through and watch the Avery Johnson era. I had to watch the Coach Grant era. I had to sit through those. I'm not going to take an Elite Eight for granted. That's something that a few programs get to experience. A few fans get to experience in their lifetime with programs. I mean, back-to-back Elite Eights. That's something to be proud of. So, it's like I said, it's the end of an era with Mark Sears and Grant Nelson and all the seniors, but it's foundation for something great. And I'm proud to have witnessed Mark Sears play basketball because he is the best basketball player in Alabama history. And I don't think anybody's going to eclipse it anytime soon. Number 1 has to be in the rafters. ASAP. No doubt about it. So let's move on from talking about Alabama and Auburn Gray, and let's look at the other three teams left in the Final Four: Houston, Duke, and Florida. Which of those? Let's just talk about all three of them. Let's start with Florida.
Yep.
What is Florida's biggest strength, and what is their biggest weakness going into playing Auburn?
Well, the biggest strength is their depth on the front court, no question, with Condon and Chinyelu and Hout and those guys. And when they're able to score in the post, it opens things up for guys like Elijah Martin and obviously Clayton and Will Richard and those guys. Look, Florida's an outstanding basketball team. They were beaten by Texas Tech. 37 minutes, they were just beaten. Manhandled. They weren't making outside shots. It was bothering them. Texas Tech was getting inside at will and scoring inside at will. So, yes, you see the strengths. You saw what they did all year. You saw what they did in very, very crucial games like against Tennessee and Alabama and Auburn and Texas Tech towards the end. They were able to make shots. They were able to get inside at will. They were able to rebound the ball really well. And they were able to defend. That's about as all as you can ask for a really good, talented basketball team like that. An experienced basketball team. I think their weakness that Auburn can try to exploit is definitely getting inside and scoring. Because if Jani Broome and Chaney Johnson are successful on the inside, that not only is that going to open things up on the perimeter for Auburn shooters, but that's going to bother Florida, just like it bothered them in the Texas Tech game. And until Walter Clayton Jr. put the team on his back towards the end of that game, Texas Tech was going to the Final Four. There wasn't any doubt about it. Texas Tech dominated that game and manhandled Florida. So, you know, Florida is an unbelievable basketball team with strengths everywhere, but they're not unbeatable.
They've showed it this tournament. I mean, UConn had them on the ropes.
Yeah, even Maryland.
Maryland did in that first half, second half. Yeah. I think Maryland's depth got to them. Yeah, Texas Tech had won that game. And Grant McCaslin, I mean, when Walter Clayton was making those shots, there's nothing you can do. I mean, you just throw your hands up in the air and say, he's simply just the best basketball player on the court right now. Yeah. I mean, Walter Clayton was shooting leaning shots, turning around, dribbling into the paint, running back out, throwing it up, making it. I mean, there's nothing Grant McCaslin or anybody on Texas Tech could have done outside of, let's just put five people on Walter Clayton Jr. and make someone else beat us. That's about the only thing Texas Tech could have done. But Walter Clayton, there is moments where he can shoot Florida out of a basketball game.
Out of the game.
Had he not made those shots, I mean, those were terrible-looking shots.
Yes.
Those were the ones against UConn. Horrible. Those were those shots where the coach is like, no. Yep. That's exactly what probably Todd Golden's saying on the benches. No, Walter, no. And he's like, oh, yay. But, yeah, Walter Clayton, he hasn't done it this year, but – there's no time like the present to do it against Auburn in the Final Four where he can shoot you out of the basketball game. So we talked about Florida. We talked about Auburn earlier. Let's talk about the other side of the bracket gray with Houston and Duke. Let's start with Duke because we already covered their Elite Eight matchup in Alabama. What's their strength? What's their weakness?
Their strength is their size. My goodness. They are huge. It is concerning. Their guards are big. They've got long wings. They've got 2 7-foot centers that they just bring in and out, and that can pass, that can finish lobs, that can rebound, that can block shots. And then they've got a 6'10" do-it-all point guard. It's just like, I don't know where to attack on defense. To beat Duke, you've got to make shots. You got to make shots from outside, and you've got to get out in front of Duke and stay away from arm's length. Now, I will say, watching Duke so far this tournament, I don't want to speak on watching Duke this past season because I didn't watch Duke in the ACC. I wasn't going to watch that. I wasn't going to waste my time. But watching Duke watching Duke so far, even through the ACC tournament and through the NCAA tournament, Duke's offense runs through Cooper Flagg. Now, that is a good thing and a bad thing for Duke. This is my weakness here. When Cooper Flagg is just on one, it's just on a tear because he's the most talented player in college basketball, they're going to be unbeatable. But he has not been like that so far this tournament. Alabama had a lot of opportunities to cut and take the and go and get that to a one score game, but Duke just kept them at arm's length away. Same thing with Arizona. The exact same thing happened. Duke's defense also worries me a little bit because, yes, they're really, really big, but they don't use their size well. They really don't. Their guards are not like lockdown defenders. Now, when they go up against small guards like they did against Alabama, they're able to just outsize them. Guys like Sears and Filon and Holloway and those guys. That was going to be an easy matchup for Duke. But when they played Arizona, and even when they played Baylor for a large portion of that game, before Tyrese Proctor decided to make 8 threes in a row, they were bothered by the size of their guards. And then when Duke's offense runs through Cooper Flagg and Cooper is struggling, which is not often, but that does happen, Duke is not good on the offensive end because Cooper tries to play hero ball because he can do that. And 85, 90% of the time, that's how Duke's going to win, is Cooper playing hero ball. But I think Duke is at best when Cooper Flagg is not in the game.
Wow, that's crazy.
It is crazy to say, but they move the ball better. Tyrese Proctor and Colin Knipple are both in the game during that time. Both of them are elite shooters and elite mid-range shooters and can get to the rim. Both are bigger guards. You've got obviously got Malawach, and then you've got somebody like Sion James or an Isaiah Evans, who I think is a better defender than Cooper Flagg on ball. Now, Cooper's more athletic. Cooper's obviously the most talented player in college basketball, and Cooper deservingly so deserves to be up there with the National Player of the Year conversation with Jahni Brown. And when he's on one, Duke's unbeatable. But when he's not, he can take them out of games as much as Walter Clayton can with Florida.
Yep. It's if you're going to stop Duke, first – stop Cooper Flagg, like Alabama was able to for the most part of that game.
100%.
I mean, Cooper Flagg was rendered almost ineffective. He scored 16 points, but he didn't shoot effectively. But what was Duke able to do? Penetrate the paint. Yes. And when they did, Konkanipple, lower my shoulder into you, elbow you a little bit, push you off the skinnier Alabama guards, and at least step back. Let me throw a full flurry of moves at you, see what you do. And if I get help from Cliff Amori or Nelson – or whoever the big guy is in the game. Lob to Malik, lob to Gumba. I mean, if you're going to beat Duke and you take Cooper Flagg out of the game, you cannot let them penetrate the paint. And if you do, you got to stay disciplined. You can't, let me help over. There was one time in the game where LeBaron Filon, he just gambled for a steal. And what did Konkanipple do? Oh, there's Malawach right there. Bam. Dunk. Easy 2 points.
Yeah.
That's why I think Houston is the perfect matchup to beat
100%. 100%.
The most disciplined defensive team in the country. They showed it against Tennessee. Tennessee, 15 points at halftime. Was that right, Gray?
Yeah.
So they're the perfect team. They're together as one unit. Kelvin Sampson is the best defensive mind in college basketball. You have two big men that can switch on to guards, switch back and forth. Your guards can switch on to big men, maybe outside of LJ Cryer. But this is the perfect team to take down Duke. Experience, defense, it's all, and three-point shooting. They're the best three-point shooting team left in the tournament. So the perfect storm to beat Duke. But like you said, Gray, if Cooper Flagg comes into it and is on one, drops a 30-point game like he did against Arizona, Houston can just pack it up. Florida can pack it up. Auburn can pack it up. Fans can pack it up. I mean, it'll just be over. He is that good of a player where if he takes over a basketball game, everybody else can forget it. But he's also similar to Walter Clayton, where he can take over the basketball game in a bad way. He can dominate the ball, turn it over. I mean, there was two games early in the season where he dribbled it off his foot, slipped out of bounds.
Yeah.
Is he trying to do way too much? And that's what I'm afraid for Duke going into this matchup is if Duke struggles, does Cooper Flagg try to do too much and dig a deeper hole? He's only a freshman. That's a big thing in these moments is he's only a freshman. He hasn't been here before. He hasn't played in these moments. This is his first NCAA tournament. He has guys around him. He's been there before. His coach played in an NCAA tournament. He won a national championship as a player. So John Shire's been here before. He's going to have these guys ready. But Cooper Flagg, like Walter Clayton, can either win you a basketball game or can do everything he can to lose you the basketball game.
100%.
And the last team.
I got to talk about Houston.
You got to talk about the Houston Cougars.
Oh, my gosh.
Best three-point shooting team left. Best defensive team. I know Auburn's up there, but they're not as good as Houston. I mean, Houston put a butt whooping to Tennessee. Just took a paddle to the rear end and just spanked him up and down the court all night long. And as an Alabama fan, I know you as an Auburn fan, you can only just sit there and giggle because you're just thinking, Rick Barnes, where's that Final Four? Tennessee, where's that Final Four, buddy?
But look, this Houston team is outstanding. They are outstanding. They're unbelievably well coached. They're so disciplined. You mentioned how disciplined they're so disciplined on the defensive end and on the offensive end. I think this is going to be less of a battle between the players and more of a battle of Kelvin Sampson teaching John Shire how to coach an NCAA tournament game, because not only is this team experienced, they're the best shooting team left. They're big enough to handle Duke. They've got guards that can stop the penetration, just like we were talking about with Duke. They've got guards that can penetrate against Duke's guards, just like Florida and Auburn do. It is not about this Houston team making a bunch of shots, you know, scoring 90 points against a Duke defense, or even holding Duke to a 50, 60-point type of outing, even though if they do, Houston's winning that game. This is about the matchup of coaches. And as much as I absolutely love the matchup of coaches on the other side with Bruce and Todd, the matchup of coaches on this side with Kelvin Sampson and John Shire is going to be cinema. Because Kelvin Sampson, experienced, been here before, knows what he's doing, has the most disciplined team I think he's ever had. And they're well more tested and more prepared than Duke is. And, oh, did I mention they're considerably more experienced and considerably more disciplined? I don't think that can be said enough. This is the Final Four. You know, the NCAA tournament is hard to come into as a freshman on its own. But this is the final. This is a whole different deal. This experience matters in these games. Not just, you know, tournament experience, but experience this season against really tough teams. And honestly, the advantage there goes to Auburn. They've played all three of the other teams already. They know what all three of these teams do. Mm-hmm. But this Houston team, having that leg over Duke, I don't want to give away my pick just yet, but this game's also in Texas, so.
Yeah. And the difference from this Houston team from years past is Houston teams from years past were heavily reliant on one person to beat you, kind of like Florida and Duke. Last year, Jamal Shedd. And this year, you have LJ Cryer, who is the guy that makes them go. But Sharp and Uzan have stepped up humongously throughout the year. So it's not just one guy go out there and beat the other team. Roberts. Yeah. He's been there for 5 years. He's been in Kelvin Sampson's system for 5 years. Tugler, he's also another big man they start. But the weakness for Houston is going to be their depth.
They don't have
a lot of scorers off the bench. They have some talent there, but they don't have somebody that can come into the game. And if LJ Cryer has one of his games where he shoots 2 for 12, like Mark Sears did against Duke, or if Uzan and Sharp aren't able to pick up the slack or somebody gets into foul trouble, Houston could struggle. So that would be the thing I've worried about for Houston going into this game is Duke has got some friendly whistles. They're at the tournament. And I'm not going to sit here and say
– And we'll continue.
That's not the reason that Alabama lost to Duke. Alabama did way too many things wrong and didn't shoot the ball well to cause them to lose to Duke. But the friendly whistles, they're at the tournament for Duke. Keep an eye on that.
They're
in Texas, but referees –
That's a great point. And the point that you made about Houston's depth, like I think Houston's playing best at it, all four of these teams. I know what Florida did towards the end of the regular season. I know what Duke and Auburn have been all year. But I think Houston's playing the best right now coming into the Final Four specifically. But they are the least deep team in this that's left, and it's not close. It's not close. And that concerns me. Because obviously, I think the next team that's not as deep is Auburn. But they have scorers off the bench. I don't think Houston does. I think they have talent. I think they have energy off the bench. But so does Auburn. Auburn also has Todd Pettiford off the bench. And Chaney Johnson off the bench. And then you look at Florida and Duke's bench. You're like, no, that's not competing with that. So that's the concern, 100% for Houston. Especially if they get into foul trouble. But, yeah, I could combat that with the strength of this team doesn't get in foul trouble because they're unbelievably disciplined on the defensive end. They don't gamble. When they do go for steals and stuff like that, they get it. And they're very disciplined at the rim. And that was one of the weaknesses for Arizona and Alabama against Duke. Because they weren't disciplined at the rim when Duke's guards were able to penetrate the paint. Houston is. And they've got some experienced guys down there with Tuttler and Roberts and their guards. I also want to just point out, as we're kind of wrapping up this talk about all these four teams, if you are one of those losers that is upset with the four best college basketball teams being in the Final Four because there wasn't, you know, a Cinderella team that went crazy or a crazy upset in the Elite Eight or the final or the Sweet 16. You don't deserve to watch these three games. You really don't, because these are by far the four best teams in college basketball, have been all year. And now they get to play in the Final Four. That's pure cinema. And I could sit here for hours and go through each team and tell you why they're going to win it and why they're not going to win it. Because each team has that, have the ability to do that for each of those teams. And that's crazy. We haven't had that in the Final Four since 2008.
Yeah.
Since the last time it was in San Antonio, since the last time it was all one seeds, we have not had that. There's always been a team in there that's just like, they're not going to win it, but it's amazing that they're in there. No, every one of these teams, each four of these teams could win the national championship. No doubt in my mind.
Yep.
Now we get to watch 120 minutes of pure cinema basketball between these four teams. And it's going to be awesome.
Before we get out of here, Gray, I want to pose this question to all our listeners and everybody out there. Would you rather see this Auburn, this Florida, this Houston, and this Duke, or 2023 where you had FAU, UConn, San Diego State, and Miami in the Final Four?
Not.
And going into that Final Four, if you didn't say UConn had nobody was going to touch UConn, you had no idea. I mean, nobody was touching UConn in that Final Four. Not a soul. No,
I remember when we were doing the show. I remember when we were doing this show talking about that Final Four, and we were like, I mean, Cool. I'm glad Florida Atlantic made it, and good for them. I mean, San Diego State, good. I mean, they were able to get to the Final Four for like the first time in forever. And then Miami just got hot at the right time. But UConn just stormed through that and then stormed through the Final Four. I barely watched those games, even though there was a buzzer beater with Lamont Butler in that Final Four. That wasn't basketball. That was basketball that you watched. That wasn't basketball that you tuned in for. That wasn't basketball that you planned your day around.
Exactly. These are the games you have no idea who's going to win it. You just want to tune in because you want to see the best basketball played at the best time.
Exactly. On the biggest stage.
Yep. On the biggest stage. This is what March is made for. I'm excited. Right. I know Gray's excited. Nathan, who's not here, I definitely know he's excited, even though Alabama's not here and lost to Duke. I know everybody in the state of Alabama, regardless of affiliation of Auburn or Alabama, is excited to watch this. And me personally, Gray, I'm hoping Auburn wins it because I can't stand Duke, and I don't hope Florida wins because I can't stand Florida fans. Maybe Houston. I appreciate what they've done, Kelvin Sampson. But I'm hoping Auburn brings it home for the state of Alabama and for you, Gray, because you struggled with football for years and years. And Auburn fans deserve something to hang their hat on because they don't have football right now.
I agree. Football is coming, but it's been a rough last about 7 years, I would say. Oh my gosh, this is a dream come true to watch your team go to two Final Fours in the last 6 years. This is a huge opportunity for these guys. Super proud to be a fan of this team all year long. My dad and I were talking earlier about where does this team before the Final Four, I mean, this team could end up being a national champion and like go down as the greatest Auburn sports team ever. But where does this team rank in terms of your favorite in your lifetime? Not just basketball, but Auburn sports teams in general. And my dad and I both agree. We both said number two. Right now, they're number two behind 2010 national championship in football with Cam Newton. And Jani Broome is number two as well behind Cam. And if he comes back with Nets from San Antonio, sorry, Cam, he's number one.
Yep. It's good for Auburn fans to have this to hang their hat on. For Bama fans, don't be discouraged. Don't hang your head. Nate Oates will have Alabama back in the Final Four. It might not be next year or the next year. Bruce Pearl took him a little bit to get back, but Nate Oates, I have full confidence in him and the coaching staff to get back to a Final Four without Mark Sears and Gray Nelson. He can do it. He's shown it year after year. Led the country in scoring back-to-back years. He'll get back to the Final Four just like Bruce Pearl did, and these programs will be mainstays in college basketball for hopefully my entire lifetime. Because yes, they have these Bruce Pearl and Nate Oates have turned these programs full 360. Full 360 from Tony 100%. Barbie and Avery Johnson days. So we'll be back next week, talk national championship and get into some coaching carousel news and some other stuff we'll have for you next week. I appreciate everyone for listening and watching Students of the Game.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.